Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Thanks for joining us. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to today's show on World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from a beautiful day, a beautiful fall day, I should say, in Fort Worth, Texas. Today, I welcome world traveler, surfer, yoga and meditation teacher and author Corey Hahn to today's show. Corey has spent 12 years in a remote cabin in Alaska. She's traveled through Southern Africa. She's traveled into Tibet. She spent time in India and now lives part of the year on the island of Sri Lanka. A sailor and boat captain, she also founded the Santosha Society, a community dedicated to travel, surfing, and the soulful, especially for women. She has her own blog and many podcasts and is the author of the book that we're going to discuss today. It's called Rituals of the Soul, Using the 8 Ancient Principles of Yoga to Create a Modern and Meaningful Life. So it's a joy to welcome Corey to today's show. Welcome. Glad you're with us.
Thank you. With an intro like that, I'll come back time and time again. I love it. Thank you so much.
There we go. Excellent. You know, each chapter starts with, your personal journey, and then you get into more details around aspects of yoga. And I know that, and this is true for many of us, you know, at certain times in our lives, there's these turning points, right, or tipping points, or moments where things aren't ever quite the same again. And sometimes they come out of trauma, and, it's not always peak experiences, it's traumatic experiences, but they lead us on, and you share many of those, right? Life has not always been great, in quote, right, in the sense that it's smooth sailing, so to speak.
Yes, there's so much pain and grief and dark nights of the soul, and I've been thinking about that a lot lately. How would we ever know our strength or what we were truly passionate about and what we truly needed for ourselves without those moments, though? Yes.
And it can be the loss of people or divorce. We're going through COVID-19 right now. That's affected a lot of people. Whether we get COVID or not, we're still influenced, aren't we, by all the the changes that the pandemic has brought.
Absolutely. I think I actually talk about each of those situations in the book and how transformative they ended up being for me.
You've also talked about, love not always working out, right, in your life. And yet tell us about that a little more.
About the love not working out? Yes.
You don't have to go into all the gory details, but...
Yeah, you don't want to hear what happened exactly, but I did find my, you know what he did to me? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. But
I found myself, I found recently that I actually probably have some codependency. And for years, I have been using relationships to gain a lot of my own self-worth. And if my husband was there at the end of the day, at least somebody loved me, because, and I would allow myself to not truly love myself. And as soon as this divorce happened, which really started taking place right as the pandemic began and lockdowns began. So it was like, I'm asking for a divorce. And now you sit at home for 2 years and think about that, you know, essentially is what happened. And it's been a blessing. It's been truly been a blessing. And at the last stages of developing and editing this book, I even decided to put this story and my experience in there, because this is such a normal, common story for us as humans. But through this past year, 2 years now, I have truly found to love myself and to not be a codependent through that journey. There's always, you know, some reason for our pain. I do believe that. When I thought that life was just suffering and that was it, to get used to it, I never was very content. So now I like to think that there's always a purpose. There's always something to learn from this. And for me, losing that love helped me to actually learn to love myself. So it's pretty worth the journey in the end. Yeah.
You know, they say that, in the Tao, it says, you know, those that travel far, you know, no less than those that don't. And I don't think it's talking literally. It's about being centered within oneself. But a lot of people use that quote to say people who, you know, go around endlessly traveling, you know, really are trying to escape from what's going on right now. How would you respond to that? I'm the same. I've traveled to over 50 countries myself during my life. And, you know, I think you mentioned you've traveled to many countries. But I've always found that traveling has been, you know, helpful to me. But once I've traveled, I realized I didn't have to travel. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. I actually love these. I have goosebumps right now, because many people haven't gone to 50 countries. I mean, and we're so fortunate, and me as well, I've been to about the same number. And luckily, I started when I was young, and what it helped me with, that travel really helped me to see things in a different perspective. So I was raised in a Christian household. But when I went to Asia and was running around in the Buddhist countries for a while, and then I went back to my Christian roots, I realized, but it said, and I cannot quote the Bible. I was never that studious when I went in my, you know, Christianity phase. But I just realized that they don't even know about Jesus, really, in the Buddhist country. So how can we say, if you don't know about him, if you don't pray to him, that you're not going to be saved? And I started really looking at things differently because of that travel, how I live in every aspect. And even my son and I just went back to the States, and it was so funny because we're so grateful for all the things, I think, that there. And most people just don't even realize, you know, like no power cuts and things like that. But all the little things of travel really just continue to make you more expansive in how you can see things and the perspectives you can see things from. So, but yes, I agree that I was chasing. I've been looking for a home and for myself. Through all that travel, I think I can say that now, after literally sitting at home for what seems like forever. We finally got out and went to the States, but we were sitting here for a long time. I think most people feel the same. Yes. And I did realize I don't need to go anywhere anymore. And now that travel has drastically changed, I had to grieve that also. But luckily, I have that experience. I know that things can be different than what I expect or what I was raised in. And so I can keep that flexibility and yet not chase home anymore. Now I'm starting to find that my home's always been within myself. And to find that, now that's where I'm journeying, is an exploration into the country of Corey, of me, and finding all the nuances of me and learning to love that in the same way that I've loved every country for being completely exotic and different.
Yeah, very good. Well, you know, the book is made up of an investigation of that, isn't it? Looking within, using the eight limbs of the, you know, the yoga sutras of Patanjali. Sometimes when people read the Yoga Sutras, they say, oh my goodness, this seems really abstruse. It's kind of difficult to understand. It seems intellectual. What I love about the way you presented it in the book is that you present it more intuitively than intellectually, right? So that you break down some of these techniques and terms in a user-friendly way. And I found that very helpful. And for anybody listening who's, you know, wants to get into yoga, but wants an easier access into it, more expansive access, I think Rituals of the Soul is really helpful in that regard. And also I should say to our listeners too, that every chapter has practical techniques, treatments, meditations, whatnot, to follow in each chapter. So it's not just talking about it. You're guided through these various stages, right? So let's jump in and talk about some of these principles of yoga. We're talking something that was written over 2,000 years ago, right? It's an ancient text.
Yes, exactly. And it was written in Sanskrit and probably not even, on some sort of tablet, but actually, I would love to see if we have any of the old scripts in a museum somewhere, because it's just so old. And it's Patanjali, the Bible of yoga, what I call it, that actually came in later. So I had this idea that, you mentioned, intuitive. And so initially when I started writing this book, I was really curious about the power of intuition. And I wanted to focus on that and yoga. And then suddenly one night I was reading through the sutras and there was one that said, intuition can be gained through all the powers of yoga. And so that's really, it dawned on me that this is actually what the yogis were guiding us to do. And I simplified all the sutras. There's four chapters, if you will, or books in this. And it divides up all the different practices and the process. And I realized, wow, this is broken up into learning to listen to your intuition and learning to act on it. And all the practices I've been doing to be a yogi, because I didn't know, just chasing, just the same way I ran around the world looking for a home. I did all the yoga practices I could ever get my hands on for 20 years and never really found myself any more content. I wasn't any more emotionally regulated. I wasn't, my anxiety maybe was a little bit better, usually when I was super diligent and dedicated. But to see it as a big picture was an aha moment for me that definitely changed how I teach as a yoga meditation teacher, but in my spiritual confidence. And it helped me. Now I have a 5-year-old son. I can't do an hour of intense movement practice with 30 minutes of meditation undistracted. I realized that, and back in the days that this was written, they must have had even more things to do, like hunting, gathering. So I really realized, oh, wow, this is not as I imagined yoga to be when I started doing the research. And yes, I think it's a really great book for people curious about yoga, because it gives you the big picture. And then from that, you can decide, I guess, which rituals, which practices would best suit you and why would you practice them, and gives people the intention and the meaning behind the practices. And
So let's do a real quick overview of the eight principles and then we can explore them. It's sort of the foundations, and the first two are sort of foundations, things not to do and things to do, as you put it, rules and virtues, right? Things to be aware of, the yamas and then the niyamas. So it's almost like denials and affirmations in unity. We would say, there's some things we need to release from consciousness if we're going to put something affirmative in its place. So these two are sort of the prerequisites, if you like, to get going, right?
Yeah, I often think of these as the Ten Commandments. And ironically, there's 10. There's 5 rules and there's 5 virtues. But in the beginning, I didn't really understand these. I didn't know why they would be the start of this 8-step process or this ladder that the yogis were explaining. And it took me a while to come to terms with these first two steps. But then I realized if I printed these the same way that many Christians might print the Ten Commandments and keep it on your wall as a reminder of how to live and what the ancient, you know, the most spiritual people back in the day in India, their suggestions for becoming a spiritual being, to use it that way, now I can actually use this. I just make my decisions from the virtues, from the list of five virtues. And should I just mention them briefly so we'll know what we're talking about?
Yeah, let's mention what we don't want, and then we can mention what we want, right?
Okay. Yes, and I don't exactly think it's what you don't want. You could look at that either way, but I try to put both a negative and a positive, but they're the rules, definitely.
And yeah, I like that. I like that word, yeah.
The first one is to be kind or to don't harm, and that's ahimsa. And you could even look at that with yourself. You could look at all of these within yourself. We often say, I don't harm. I take care of all the stray dogs on my street. But this, do you self-loathe? Do you self-criticize? Do you judge yourself into a coma at times? You know, to really look at these within yourself, because that's what this entire process is about. So to be kind, to don't harm, ahimsa, to be honest and not lie, to truly know your truth, or work towards that at least, is satya. Don't steal, don't take other, and even in a way to steal, you don't have to take what other people's lives, ideal lives look like and make that your own. You can, you know, you don't steal money, don't steal ideas, don't steal other people's dreams. You really want to come to your truth and figure that out on your own. And that's asteya. The fourth one is respect your body and life is sacred. Brahmacharya, and that's really about understanding and moving towards greater self-worth, I believe, and valuing this life. And then the last one is to simplify, to minimize, and to not be wasteful, aparagaya. And when I think back to when Patanjali would have wrote this, they didn't have Costco back then, you know? This really wouldn't have been about the material. It would have more been about your schedule, I think. Like, even back in, you know, 3,000 years ago, perhaps, you know, there was still sorts of anxiety. There was still a lot of mental clutter and ways of distracting yourself from your purpose. So I believe that those five rules, when we look at them to ourselves, those are the rules for a spiritual life, as the yogis found.
I was going to say, it's amazing to me how close they are to the five, like you mentioned, the first five commandments, you know, very, very similar, aren't they? And also the five precepts of the Buddha, you know, almost identical. So, yeah, fascinating.
Exactly. Yes, I find that fascinating too. And as I started moving through these, I loved that, how aligned all the religions became. And even more so with Kabbalah, with Hinduism, with you know, every different sect. I mean, I've been studying theology for my whole life. As I traveled, that was truly what I was interested in learning in all the different places. And yes, that gave me some spiritual confidence, seeing like, oh, wow, this is most of the, you know, superior spiritual guides here on earth are guiding us to do these things. So there must be something to that.
Right.
Then the niyamas are the virtues of a spiritual being. And this took some time for me as a yogi, but I wasn't focusing on this, to be fair. I was really focusing on asana, what most people consider yoga, you know, the Lululemon pants and the yoga mat, and moving your body, and meditation. But I didn't see the 8 steps in equal in a non-linear fashion, which is one of the greatest things that happened with my perspective. But the niyamas I like to think of are how we make a decision, because it can be hard to know exactly what you want and what to do. And a claim I make in the book is that your soul is guiding you towards dreams, because through the process of manifesting or creating or metamorphizing yourself into that dream, you're doing the growth that your soul truly wants to see and came into your human body to have you achieve. which ultimately, eventually, your dream might become enlightenment, heaven, Shangri-La, Zion. So you get better every time you move through these eight steps. You're going to get better at that process. And eventually you might have some really big dreams like those I just mentioned to use this same practice to achieve. And so in the beginning, when you're listening to your intuition and you're not quite sure if it's your thinking mind coming back and mentioning it or if it's truly a whisper of your soul, these niyamas have been helpful for me to say, oh, this dream aligns with me becoming more of this spiritual human or spiritual soul, I should say. And so that's how I like to view these niyamas, these virtues. And the first one is cleanliness, to keep the body clean with exercise, clean your schedule to make more time, keep your mind clean, and cutting out the toxicity, if that's people, if that's habits, whatever it is, if whatever you're thinking of doing or want to do or whatever you're prioritizing, you want to look back at these niyamas like this one, cleanliness, and say, is it leading me towards this? And that's saucha in Sanskrit. The next one is contentment, santosha. And that's if it makes you happy, do more of it. If it feels good to you, do it as often as you can. Spend more time with people who make you happy, doing things that you love. And that's santosha. That's what I actually name my business after. And that's why surfing is included in my meditation and yoga program or gathering place that I host. And the third one is tapas, burning enthusiasm. We get these pings of excitement, like a light goes off and you're just ready. You're curious. You're passionate. You're ready to chase your dreams. Follow that. And even if that takes you the wrong way or you think it's the wrong way, I believe our intuition and our soul will guide us right back like a GPS. It will redirect you. But if you follow that passion, and if that passion is making you contentment, even better, is bringing you contentment, that's even better. And then the fourth one is study of the self. We want to constantly be looking at our dreams and the decisions we are making to constantly ask ourselves, who am I? What am I? What am I doing here in this body? And because of that, we will naturally, I believe, if you do have that mission, if you have that curiosity to learn who you are, the answers will come. You start to gain worth because you realize you're sacred. And that's svadhyaya. So explore yourself through self-inquiry. And the last one is to trust in the universe, asvara, pranadana. The thing is, we can create our rituals, which this entire book guides you to do, to have a calm mind, to stay focused, a plethora of things we can create, of feelings. But at the end of the day, 25% really isn't up to us. The pandemic wasn't up to us. If this book got published, that wasn't really up to me. That was up to the agents and the publishers. So we have to realize that we're not actually in control, because if we think we are, we think we can make it happen only on our own. It's really growing our ego, isn't it? Our human attachment. And that's going to make us miserable. And sometimes you might find that you've manifested a dream and you weren't trusting in the universe. You weren't giving that, you know, dream the how and the when and how it's going to happen to just the universe in some way. And that really takes all the painful clinging out of life, I believe, when you have some sort of trust. And even in the beginning, I mean, because at first I wasn't into the dogma that I was raised with, and I was almost turned off by it. And then when I started integrating spirituality again, it was a little bit difficult. But I started by thinking, the air that's surrounding this earth is keeping me alive every second. And the gravity is keeping me here on earth. Like, there's little things that we don't have control of. Energy and frequency are scientifically proven influential powers that surround us. And when we tap into that, we can really align our dreams with the reality we're living in. And we stop trying to create for money, for self-worth, and all these other things. And we start creating as an exploration of this whole thing, once again, of who am I, of how did this happen? And you start to believe in miracles, I believe, when you're praying. And what is a prayer other than verbally expressing your wish, your desire for yourself, what you want. And so you don't even need a yoga mat really for any of these eight principles, but especially these first two. These can just be guidelines for how to live your life and what the yogis believe would guide you to realizing self-realization and deeper consciousness.
Absolutely. You know, I think it was Albert Einstein that said one of the most important questions we can ask ourselves is the universe friendly? And depending on how we answer that determines, you know, how everything unfolds, right? Because if we see the universe as a scary place, you know, filled with all kinds of horror and fear, then that tends to condition our reality. And it, likewise, if we see it as a benevolent universe, you know, that helps us, like you were mentioning, with gravity and other forces around us, then we can trust it more and it unfolds in a different way for us. And I tend to want to trust it because it's provided me everything, right? Most of the functions that go on in my body, I can't control. They happen automatically and they happen beautifully too. So why wouldn't I want to trust them, right? The universe has been doing its thing for billions of years and it's doing quite a good job. So I think it's good to trust it, actually.
I think many people feel lost until they find it. I think that's a part of finding home. Is really finding, is believing that you're just as sacred as the universe is miraculous. And I love that you mentioned Albert Einstein, because I actually put a quote of his also in my Believe and Trust, which is all about that trusting in the universe chapter. Believing in yourself and also trusting in the universe is the final stage of right before it creates, you manifest, or samadhi is what I call it, that heaven, that
exactly
reaching your goal.
I hear the music coming up. We need to take a break. We're at the halfway time. I'm with Corey Hahn. We'll return to talk about her book, Ritual for the Soul, after these messages from Unity. Join us then.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Experience the difference. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world. We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
So welcome back to today's show. I'm with Corey Hahn. We're talking about her book that's just come out. It's called Rituals of the Soul, Using the Eight Ancient Principles of Yoga to Create a Modern and Meaningful Life. It's available from New World Library, which means it's available everywhere in Amazon, other outlets. And if people want to get in touch with you directly, Corey, what's the best address for you? Website, whatever.
I have a website at Santosha Society, and there's a collection of meditations and programs and some new things coming, podcast also, but that's the best place. And from there, you get access to all the, where the tentacles lead you away from there to socials and YouTube or all these podcasts and interviews, anything like that. But I do think the book is the best place to start, because it feels like my entire life as a yogi went into this, and not like as far as writing it, but just realizing the different way of seeing yoga. And buy the book. And if you want to hear more, then you can link to me. There's also a website link right on the back of the book too. So it makes it easy.
Sweet. And we're talking about the eight limbs of yoga, the ancient principles. We talked about the first two, the rules and the virtues, as Corey names them, and now we're moving on to the other limbs of yoga. You know, we're familiar in the West, as you mentioned, you know, with asanas, with the movements, right? The which take up most of our energy in the West. You know, you think about yoga, you think about yoga postures and whatnot, and that's fine, but that's only a small part of what yoga has to offer. But I love the way you, instead of calling them postures, whatever, you call them creating space. And so that expands this whole idea, right? Because I never thought of asanas as creating space before in that sense, but they are. You're creating a comfortable place of contentment and trust around yourself so that you can practice these things, but it's also creating space in your environment, right? So the asanas are expansive. You feel like you're not rushed, you have time enough to do these things. And, you know, in our society, we are so rushed. So I love this idea of creating space. And time is involved with that, you know, because there's a space-time continuum we're in. So I love that idea that, you know, you're creating, again, deepening the foundation upon which you live a happy and meaningful life, right?
Yes, exactly. Well, you said it exactly right, and I can tell you really know this stuff, which makes this all very enjoyable for me. But the thing is that in the Yoga Sutras, there's over 200 written, and only one of those is about asana, and it even says the word asana, and it just says to be steady and comfortable. That's it. It's preparing you to dive into the practices. So are you comfortable and steady when you're working 12 hours a day, when you don't get to see your kid? Like, what's taking you away? Is your mind too busy with anxiety of the future to feel comfortable and steady? Like, what is it that makes you not feel comfortable and steady? And let's start using Marie Kondo's method of finding what brings you joy and what doesn't, and create more open, expansive schedule for yourself so you can literally come to a posture, maybe it's meditation posture, and start your spiritual practice. Start learning how yoga is gonna, you know, help you explore yourself, or it doesn't have to be yoga. It could be anything. It could be the Buddhist lineage or, you know, whatever. But the first thing of any, like when you're falling apart, when my husband left me, when my, you know, boyfriend in college died, that forced me to create space. That's, you know, when the wind is knocked out of you, that's why that happens, I believe. Because that's when we usually go within. We sit at home. We take the time. We call off all the meetings. And in many ways, COVID, the pandemic, did this for many people. And I can't even tell you how many clients have written me since the pandemic, and they have a new job, they left their partner, they're just changing things up because they never stopped to listen to themselves. And so that's what you want to do. I believe the third, fourth, and fifth principles are all guiding you to just learn to get to know yourself, to learn to be intuitive, to touch in to what your inner soul, this voice that just subtly whispers out from the deepest part of your psyche and your conscious to reveal what your purpose is. And so that's the first three, like, tangible things. Once you've printed your niyam, your rules and your virtues, then you're going to start creating space with asana. So if you like, even you can use your body to create space also with poses. Many people know how to do that, so I don't want to get into that. And there's teachers all over the world in every small village. I mean, even in the most remote villages in India, or I mean, not India, like Africa, you can still find people who know a little bit about yoga, the physical practice. But once we move much deeper than that, it seems to be hard to find a teacher that goes into more depth. And so that first step, getting into it, sure, go to a yoga class, figure out what you need, just take that space to dive in. Yoga actually means the cessation of the fluctuations of the mind. And I find that really funny because so many of us go to yoga to do this physical breathing practice, and clearly that is going to help your mind. But for me in my life, I have a lot of energy naturally. Like I do things all day long. Even if I don't work out, I never tend to like get overweight or so the physical, I don't need that. What my problem is anxiety and depression. That creates a lot of suffering for me and it always has. And so that's where that next step, pranayama, breath awareness, becomes very important. So once you're sitting in a comfortable, steady position, you want to become mindful. You want to learn and teach the mind to be focused and concentrate. And that's the purpose in the beginning of your meditation. How long can you sit and breathe in and out of your nose? Because what you'll find is with time, and this is even proven in studies, the gap of your thinking mind, there will become peace between your thoughts. And you will learn to not only have less thoughts, but more so you'll realize that they're going to come and go, so quit reacting to them, which was a really important message for me with someone with almost debilitating anxiety at times in my life. And so as I started breathing and as I let that anxiety go, as I started creating even more space, and even if within that space there was grief, like I told you, the dark night of the soul is what leads us to this moment of sitting down and doing this at times, I started to feel. And that's where we move into that fifth principle, developing awareness, pratyahara, which means sense withdrawal. So if you close your eyes, your ears, and everything, and you move within, learn to feel. And that's how you're going to hear the messages that your soul wants you to hear. Your entire migration for this human life is written down in your soul. Like, not that it's all planned, but as far as your guidance, how you're going to get there, how you're going to be magnetized towards things, you're going to have to feel for that. And so that's that fifth stage, pratyahara. And once once you do that, you've become intuitive. You're going to get not only feeling like the traumas of your life, because that's going to come too, and it's going to be hard, but you're also going to get this crazy idea one day, like I did, that just says, write a book on intuition. And then you're going to say, well, that's silly. I usually don't write anything longer than an Instagram caption. And then the next day when you're doing your meditation, again, I really think you should study more about intuition. You know, and so that's when I realized, oh, my God, this is the first five steps are teaching me to listen to myself, that essentially I am my own guru.
Right, exactly. What I was going to say was, you know, people say, well, sense withdrawal, what's that? You know, that sounds like abstruse or something, or esoteric, but really it means, you know, don't let yourself be distracted so much, right? You know, our minds, our feelings, you know, rushing in so many directions, and this particular, you know, step in the limbs of yoga is to come home to ourselves, right? To face who we are, but with that confidence that you mentioned earlier, you know, that we're in a friendly universe, we can look and we can come to the something more beautiful within ourselves, you know, that's greater than our anxieties or our attachments or our fears, you know, and release those, begin to unblock ourselves from, you know, all these things that get in our way, right? So we open up to a larger sense of who we are, which is actually quite a startling thing sometimes, you know, because you realize, my goodness, yeah, there's a magnificence in me, right? That I've been blocking or hiding because I'm being fearful or afraid to look, distracted, you know, divided, my attention's taken elsewhere. And just coming home to ourselves, initially it's a bit frightening, you know, but eventually we realize, my goodness, you know, this is cool. This is, who I am in truth is remarkable.
Yes, the truth. I kept wanting to say that. It's truth. It's figuring out truth. And in the beginning, the truth is not pretty. It's all your trauma, too.
Right.
It's, you know, it's and oftentimes I think that's why people stop their yoga journey. They do their asana, they do their meditation, and then that's it. That no one really teaches you to listen. And okay, so you realize you're codependent there. So you realize, oh, I have a dream to write a book. It could be both good and bad realizations, but it's truth. And And once you realize that, you really can't unsee it anymore. And so the only thing left to do is to act on that truth, whatever it is. If you want to write the book, if you want to not be codependent, it, you know, to heal your trauma, to have less anxiety. I'm like, wow, it's like a Saturday night at 10 p.m. and I have intense anxiety. Like, just knowing what your truth is, then the only step to truly manifesting it, as the yogis say, or to moving on from that, is, like you even said it, to unblock and to overcome the challenges. So you said, I want to write a book, but God, book's a dying breed and it's really hard to get an agent. Like, your fears and your limiting beliefs come out usually right after that, you know, or like, I know that I'm really dependent on my husband, but I am so scared to leave. I don't know. So that next step, which is dharana, unblocking and overcoming challenges, the yogis get into that in quite a bit. It's actually many sutras in the book. They explain the five big life lessons that we have to learn and how we're going to try to move through those. Those are things like craving and aversion, very similar to the Buddhist teachings as well. And misperception, you know, ignorance. And so really trying to find more truth and to walk that truth. So that's what that dharana step wants us to do. And once you're really, you know your truth and you're walking that truth, you've done it. That's the only thing that actually you have to do to manifest, is know what you want and go after it. Going after it also isn't going to be easy. Like we just talked about, it might be hard work, but now you know where you're going. So you're right. It's hard, but it's liberating. And that's, you're done. That's all the work. The last two steps are really, I believe, a bit easy, like kind of in the flow, which is that believing and trusting. Naturally, if you want to overcome the challenges, you're going to have to believe in yourself. You're going to have to trust in the universe, or even trust in some support systems, therapy, a book coach, a podcast, you know, life coaching, whatever it is you need. But open yourself to support and to loving yourself enough to do it, whatever it is. And then in a moment, it happens. That's what they call samadhi with seed. There's two types of manifestation. I call it manifestation, but samadhi is liberation. There's two types. Samadhi with seed, I believe, are the dreams. It's the book. It's the relationship. It's the building a house. It's getting the new job. It's things you know, earthly things. But then they tell us the final samadhi is without seed. And that's why if we practice this cycle, this ladder enough, we learn to climb out of ourselves into the world, essentially, and put ourselves into the world, then we will get the big dream, enlightenment. And so that's how the whole thing works. And when I started using it for the small dreams and realized it worked, then suddenly I had a spiritual confidence, like I said before, that, oh my God, I actually could maybe become enlightened now that I understand how to get there, because I never even knew. I just thought it was something we talked about. It seemed really far-fetched, right? And so it's a good thing to actually believe that you can do that. And if it's something you want, you're going to start passionately working towards that.
Yeah, there's various, depending on who you're studying with or whatever, there's various levels of samadhi. You know, you mentioned with the seed or without the seed, you know, the one that's totally focused, you know, the one that's still focused in the physical, if you like, and then the one that's sort of transcended that, and it's sort of an emptiness feeling, but it's, I wouldn't say emptiness in a negative sense, but, you know, the ultimate spaciousness, right? But then some of the yogis talk about a kind of samadhi that's just, and the Zen Buddhists talk about it too, you know, just ordinary living, basically, but it's a different kind of ordinary living, right? It's you're still just going about your business, but you're no longer attached to it all. You know, there's a naturalness about it, right? You're just going through your life. I mean, you know, there's that famous book, you know, Before Enlightenment, Chop Wood, Carry Water, and After Enlightenment, Chop Wood, Carry Water. But there's a whole different way we do the chopping and carrying, you know, after the awakening, right? It's a different beast than it was when we were still, you know, filled with all the anxieties and the distractions, disturbances.
Absolutely. There's an ease and an expansion to everything when we kind of get in the flow. And I use the Dalai Lama because I just think he's the most well-known enlightened. I mean, I believe he's to be enlightened. And he does that. He lives in his temple. He walks around. He's just not really concerned with it. He calls himself a professional laugher. He doesn't take himself seriously. If he wants to write books, he writes books. Someone comes in and gives them a good idea. You want to be on an interview? Sure, I'll do that too. He really can go with the flow. And I mean, we look at that as like such a cool like thing to do with, but it's really like about spiritual maturity as well, to be able to not need much of anything and just accept and listen and do and be.
Right. One thing I want to mention before we space out into samadhi is that a lot of what you talk about is feeling too. And I like that in the book. You know, feeling means being in touch with what's going on, right? Honestly, being with it. And you mentioned it earlier. But I think that's hugely important because it doesn't really matter what the object of our feeling is. If we're authentically feeling something, then there's that, the work is being done. So even if we're feeling our pain or feeling our suffering or sadness or whatever, and understanding it for what it is, that's the breakthrough, right? It's not trying to avoid anything. It's facing everything. And that seems to me to be the guarantee for progress in this regard.
The de-shaming of it all. Even I just so often think, I don't want to just talk about my pain all the time to everyone. But I also want, I think the biggest hindrance to our path, one of them, the yogis actually detail that out a little bit more, but for me, it has been shaming of so much of what I feel. Shaming my anxiety, shaming my codependency, shaming all these things that have come up. And then it just stops me. There's nowhere to go from there because I'm just sitting in a shame trauma cycle. And it's really cool that we're living in this modern time where we've come up, we realize so much about trauma and about pain cycles and about how we transfer pain and all these other things. But yes, when we start feeling and accepting and not shaming anymore, that's when we're going to start feeling worthy. We're going to start loving ourselves. We're going to start asking ourselves, okay, so you feel anxious and you're nervous. What do you need right now? That's okay that you feel that way. Let's work through that. Let's, you know, and you have this compassion for yourself. That's just, it changes everything. That's, for me, I just know that that has been stopping me so much from any kind of moving the needle in happiness and contentment and anything that I wanted, you know, was to feel worthy enough to give myself it. So, yes, that's to feel and to love it, no matter what it is a huge step in this.
The book is entitled Rituals of the Soul, and that there are many rituals through the book, right? And rituals, perhaps not in the way we might think of it in classical terms, you know, where we're doing special rituals like might be familiar with in Catholicism or Hinduism. But these are more self-rituals that we have on a daily basis. Simple things like going out and walking on the ground without our shoes on, right? To feel to be earthed, you know, to feel the ground beneath our feet. And you have many of these rituals throughout the book. They help us to ground to reality, right? Take us out of our heads, back into our being, into our bodies, and into our intuitive selves. And I love that. And a lot of them are very simple, but that's fine, you know, but they're very profound as well, I think.
And I break the rituals up into two parts, and I want us to work on each of these skills, and I hope the reader will work on each of these steps, these principles, to learn how to concentrate and focus. And so you create a ritual to create mindfulness, especially if you are someone like me and your mind seems to be stopping all progress for anything in your life, whether tangible or spiritual or any essence. Or learning to feel, if that's not your thing, you've been, you know, don't want to face that, then that might be a more important ritual for you, but really to create the rituals for a purpose. But then there's two sections. You have the intuition rituals and the manifestation rituals, which really, I just want you to get clear on what do you want and create rituals from that. So even I asked myself, I want to be happy. Okay, what makes me happy? Spending 5 minutes with my kid doing nothing but having fun, playing a game, whatever he wants, to be honest. And then if I do that 5 times a day, I have 5 moments of happiness each day. Guaranteed. You know, I mean, not totally guaranteed, but like more so than just kind of winging it and hoping for happiness. And I can do that with peace, with anything, you know. So, and to stop this idea that you need a yoga mat. They didn't have yoga mats. That's not how it worked. Yoga was this prescription to help us get where we wanted to go. Ultimately, that's it. So let's go back to that. Let's figure out what you want and how you want, and make little moments of it as much as you can. Yeah.
Love it. So as you can see, folks, this book is filled with all kinds of good stuff. It's lays out the limbs of yoga, the 8 principles, but also provides a nuanced look at them in terms of expanding beyond, you know, the ways we might have read them before, and then provides many practical, in this case, rituals, but also meditations, guided meditations through the various stages. So it's an eminently practical book. And as Corey said earlier, it's based on her life experience. It's not just some ideas she's written down because they sound good. This is more from the heart. So I like that about it too. I'm going to tell people about next week's show. And then, Corey, give us some kernels of advice and wisdom that we can take into our week, okay, based on your understanding and what you think we might could use this week. So be thinking about that, and I'll tell people about next week's show. Next week, British author, poet, spiritual teacher, and professor Steve Taylor, PhD, it returns to the show. He was on last year, now he's come back. This time he'll talk about his new book entitled Extraordinary Awakenings, When Trauma Leads to Transformation. Interesting, we just mentioned that earlier, but he's written a whole book about that idea. Wonderful guy. Join me then for that. And also look out for my own book, which is coming out in December. It's called Unity and World Religions, and it's been published by Unity. I'm excited about that coming out. I'll tell you more about it when it's nearer to the published date. But right now, to conclude our show, Corey's going to give us some wisdom. She's already shared a lot of wisdom, but some practical advice for, you know, some seed idea we can take into our week.
Well, it's hard for me because I don't feel like a guru, and I try to make that very clear in the book that I am a very average human girl that just likes to travel and dabbled in a lot of yoga and had this realization. It feels very much channeled. So sometimes to give wisdom feels a bit, you know, second-tier, uncomfortable. But I, you know, since we've talked about so much of the worth journey and even my own codependency and started with losing love and divorce and all of this, I'm going to just share a Ram Dass quote, which is actually the quote I use for the conclusion chapter at the end of the book. And he wrote, it is important to expect nothing, to take every experience, including the negative ones, as merely steps on the path and to proceed. And I think that's really, if we could all just realize that we don't have to, you know, fight everything. We don't have to be right. All we have to do is observe it, and the transformation will happen as it's meant to do. Feel, see, be with, and walk where you want to walk. And we can make it so much more, life so much more simple, and even spirituality so much more simple than it seems like it's always needed to be, you know?
I love
Hopefully
it.
Hopefully that works.
Wonderful. All right, we're at the end of our show. Thank you so much, Corey, for being with us today. And thank you, folks, for listening. Take care now.
Thank you so much for having me. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.